A technical question about Australia's carbon emissions has become central to the debate about this country's position after any climate change agreement. It's the issue of whether events like droughts and bushfires should be excluded from Australia's tally. It's been reported that Australia is trying to exclude their effects. The Prime Minister has avoided responding to questions about the controversy today. Andrew McIntosh from the Climate Law and Policy Centre at the ANU says exclusion would make it easier for Australia to meet its emissions reduction targets, very much easier. He told Alexandra Kirk in Canberra that the government was trying to engineer a significant change in the rules for land use and forestry.
The major one is that they're trying to ensure that the rules allow for countries to include the effects of human-induced actions while excluding natural factors. And that's going to favour Australia quite significantly, and it's one of the major points of debate that's going on in Copenhagen at the moment.
And how much difference would it make
potentially,
for Australia?
It potentially a lot. It would cut the mitigation costs by potentially up to a half, depending on what is included and what's excluded, and it would make meeting any target a lot easier than it otherwise would be.
How much easier?
Well, it's difficult to measure. In terms of just the deforestation area, you could potentially get over 100 million tonnes of abatement out of that sector, and Australia's total emissions at the moment are about 600 million tonnes. So, you know, it's one-sixth of Australia's emissions could be offset out of just deforestation, and then you've got to include the other sectors.
And if bushfires and droughts were excluded?
If bushfires and droughts are excluded, it makes quite a significant difference, and it also would iron out the fluctuations that you see year on year in our land sector emissions. If the international community doesn't agree to that change, I can't really see the Australian government including those areas in Australia's account simply because of the risk that in particular years you'll get major surges in emissions.
The Climate Change Minister, Penny Wong, says not all of Australia's emissions are capable of management in terms of human activity, and Australia is working to improve the accounting rules. But the French are angry, accusing Australia of cheating by wanting to cover up huge emissions. Is that accusation justified in your view?
It's a difficult area. I mean, the Australian government is trying to balance two things. On the one side, it wants to make abatement a lot cheaper. The other side of the argument is that abatement in this area is very uncertain and the current rules are only partial. You only get partial coverage of all emissions and sinks in the land use area. So you can argue it one way or the other. The big problem is that because of the uncertainty, there's a lot of room for abatement that doesn't actually occur. So the only real way to get around this problem is for developed countries to significantly increase their targets. By increasing your target, you provide greater slack or greater fat in the system that allows you to get away with some of the measurement errors associated with this area.
If a new global climate deal is struck at Copenhagen, and that's a big if, and if extraordinary events like bushfires and droughts are excluded, how easy would it be for Australia to cut greenhouse emissions, say the 15% cut that they're talking about, or even 25%?
If everything goes our way and the rules are changed to suit Australia's interests, then meeting a 15% target becomes relatively easy compared to other countries, pretty much to any other country in the developed bloc.
So is the opposition leader, Tony Abbott, right to say then that so-called direct action could see Australia meet its emissions target without the need for an emissions trading scheme?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that Australia could meet its target through direct action. It's just a question of, is it the most efficient way of doing it, and is it the fairest way of going about those emission reductions? With the government scheme, you would have the polluters and the consumers of polluting products being the primary source for financing for reforestation, afforestation and land use activities. In the opposition scheme, it would be spread across all taxpayers, so polluters would be getting a more of a free hand than they would under the government scheme.
From what you've seen so far, how do you rate the chance of the Copenhagen summit agreeing to an ambitious global climate deal?
I think all the evidence at the moment suggests that there's not going to be an ambitious global climate deal out of Copenhagen. I think what we would hope for at this stage is for an interim agreement at Copenhagen that leaves open the option for a stronger targets and a stronger agreement in the new year or possibly even in 2011. But if they push an agreement at this point, I'm fearful that we will end up with a soft agreement and that'll be locked in for 5 to 10 years, which could be very, very disadvantage or basically write off the chances of avoiding 2 degrees of warming.
Andrew McIntosh, Associate Director of the Australian National University's Centre for Climate Law and Policy, with Alexandra Kirk.